The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Good morning, gentlemen. Happy New Year to you all.
Happy New Year, Scott.
Happy New Year, Don.
Happy New Year, guys.
So a pretty, now they say January. Uh-oh. I mean, it's not quite, the bills haven't arrived yet, but they are too soon. That is for sure. How do we get through this year? What are your thoughts as we head into this new year?
Well, yeah, you know what? Last year, we had its challenges, and we don't have to explain those at this time because everybody knows those. And, you know, it's nice to get through the holidays and you kind of just let the defenses relax a little bit. And now it's okay, back into 2023. And you know what? It's been a reality check. It's time to kind of step back and say, okay, what are we going to do this year? And on that note, this is exactly what Jay's going to be talking about.
Yeah, great. Yeah, so Don, you're going to touch on resolutions, I think, in the next set, but I'm just going to touch on a little bit what happened over the last year and where we were and what happened. Obviously, people know where they are, but one of the big things that we notice in our business is Canada's net worth. And there's lots of articles in the Globe and Mail the last couple of weeks about net worth declining. And it's obvious, you know, the price of houses have gone down, your investments have gone down. So your net worth is a calculation between what your investments, your house, your car, any of your other belongings, minus your debts, mortgages, loans. So that net number is what your net worth is. So generally that increases over time. As you pay down your debt, save for your investments increase, house values increase, your net worth is supposed to continue to go up. And often we see that when we're sitting down with reviews for our clients, we're looking at their net worth. And that's kind of a bar where we set and make sure that their net worth's increasing. Well, this year, we're in a kind of anomaly where it didn't happen because everything went down. Investments went down, real estate went down. So what do we do? And where are we? So houses have dropped about 20, anywhere from 5 to 20%, depending on the location of your property. Generally, that's your largest asset. So that's put a big dent in people's net worth this year. So a drop of 20% in one of your largest assets. And if you've owned rental properties or cottages, that's also inflated the drop in your net worth because it's a bigger portion of your overall portfolio. So definitely no safe haven this year on where you could invest your money or where you could put your money and not preserve your net worth unless you're in a cash position. So yeah, go ahead, Don.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Real estate's one of those things that there's a lot of people have never seen the real estate market go down. And we heard a lot of people, particularly younger folks, saying, okay, well, real estate only goes up. Let's say it only does, say, 8 to 10%, thinking that's normal. And it was interesting. I often said, well, you haven't gone through a downturn. And, you know, we're getting a little older, I guess. And we've seen this happen a number of times. And it all comes back down to the averages. And so when you have a huge uptick, it's got to get back to the mean. And that stocks too. Real estate is the exact same way.
Yep, no different in the stock market. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, there's lots of anxious people right now never seeing their house drop in value. So getting a little bit of panic setting in. You know, when we see people, when the markets drop in the stock market, we see people start to panic and get anxious and think they have to sell. The same thing with these houses. Now people are looking at it and saying, wait a minute, maybe I should start selling.
You really have to feel you really have to feel sorry for those who purchased in the last year or two during the height of all of this when, you know, a lot of people were looking for bigger homes or more house or wanted to get out of the city or whatever. And we're just desperate to get out. And now, you know, the people who bought in the last year or so, they're the ones that must be thinking, my goodness, my mortgage is bigger than the value of my house at this point. You talked about cottages. You talked about cottages. That's another example of where the price even fluctuates more than a house does. So, man, anybody that bought in the last year, they're feeling the pinch right now.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it's all about time, right? So if you bought a house in the last year, it's going to take some time. Houses will stabilize at some point. The markets
will go up.
They will go up at some point. capital markets will prevail and the stock market will go back up at some point as well. So it's just a matter of time. And how much time do you have on your side? That's kind of the thing. If you're looking to flip a house in the last year, probably sitting with a large mortgage or a highly leveraged property, and the value, like you said, could be worth more than the, or worth less than what the mortgage is. So
yeah. And the whole idea of flipping is speculating. That's just another term for speculating. That's not investing.
Yeah. Almost like day trading almost, but on
in
a
real estate.
So yeah, during this time, you got to make sure that you're paying down your debts. Don't change your plan. If you've got a financial plan in place, make sure you stick to that plan. Yeah, your net worth's down, but keep paying down that debt. Keep investing. Don't vary from the plan just because things have kind of gone off the rails a little bit. Make sure you stick to the plan. You know, Don and I are optimists. We look at downturns as opportunities, and the stock market right now is on sale. Houses are on sale. I don't know if we're at a bottom in the stock market. I don't know if we're at a bottom in the price of house, but it's at a discount and now there's opportunity. So houses are becoming more affordable, but on the flip side, interest rates going up. So are they really affordable? I did a quick analysis on the average price of houses in Hamilton. In June, it was $935,000. Today it's $835,000. So a drop of about $100,000 over the last 6 months. You know, if you needed to get a $700,000 mortgage in June, rates were about 5% for a 5-year mortgage. Now they're at about 5.6. So you got a slight increase in the mortgage rates. However, if you were to buy that same house, you're paying $100,000 less. So you've got $100,000 less mortgage, comparatively speaking. On a $700,000 mortgage for 25 years at 5%, the payment monthly would be about $4,071. Now, if you bought that same house at $100,000 cheaper, but you're paying a higher interest rate, that same $600,000 mortgage now at 5.6 is $3,697 a month. So a difference of about $375. And then I looked at it and said, okay, well, that's probably about the cost of property taxes in Hamilton on that same property value. So, you know, are you any further ahead or behind? I think it's becoming more affordable for houses for people in terms of the drop. I guess the moral of the story is that my adult children won't be living with me forever. So hopefully they can afford to buy a house at some point. A few suggestions when buying a house: make sure you use a real estate agent. I think there's some value in a real estate, especially when you're buying. It doesn't cost you anything. Some people aren't aware of that. When you're buying your first home, when you enlist the services of a real estate agent, it doesn't cost you anything. The seller is the one that's paying for the purchase, not the buyer. So you can have one or two or three different real estate agents working for you at the same time. Real estate agents don't like that, but you can definitely do that. Getting a mortgage, make sure you shop around. Go to the bank that you normally bank with and see what the best rate you can get, and then shop it around, because often that bank will offer you a rate, but it might not be their lowest of the low rates. So once they know you've shopped around and trying to get the best possible rate, they may come back to you with a better rate if you've got something in hand saying, you know, another institution's offering a better rate. Consider long-term thinking or forecasting when picking a term for your mortgage. So there's one, you know, you got your 1-year fixed, your 3-year fixed, your 5-year fixed, or your variable, are kind of the standard type mortgages that are out there right now. If you're buying to flip houses, you don't want to lock in for a long period of time on a mortgage. Probably look at a shorter term. Do you think rates are going to start to decrease? So, you know, people are saying we're going to start stabilizing these interest rates. I don't know if that's true or not. I hope so. But if they are going to start to decrease, you might not want to lock in for a long period of time. Again, speculation a little bit, but if you think rates are going to drop, then maybe you should hold off on that long-term locking in at this point in time. If you're on a tight budget, if you've got a fixed income and you've got a tight budget, you might want to look at locking in for a longer term so you know exactly what your payments are. Yeah, you might sacrifice some flexibility and might end up paying a little bit more, but at least you're in a position where you're guaranteed to have that payment structured and set for that whole period. Get pre-approved. Most people don't even know that they can do that. You don't have to get approved for a mortgage and then buy something. You can get pre-approved and have it standing there for 60 or 90 days. And that pre-approval's in place so that you know what you can afford. So when you go shopping with that real estate agent, know what your budget is. And often when you get that pre-approval at the bank, it might be a little higher than you think, because they're looking at it just from a pure numbers standpoint. point. So just because you're approved for a certain amount of, on a mortgage doesn't mean you can necessarily afford it. The bank will, like I said, the bank will approve you for possibly a substantially higher amount than you can afford. So it's definitely worth going through a detailed financial review with your advisor and look for through a cash flow analysis. Make sure that you've gone through every expense to know what you're going to be looking at. You can't predict everything that's going to happen when you buy a house, but at least have a budget in place and know where you stand in terms of what you can afford. Even though the bank may approve you for a certain amount, make sure you know what you can actually what you can get. Sitting down with a financial planner, doing a comprehensive financial plan, that'll help give you some kind of a roadmap so that you have a guidance, identify what you can afford, give yourself a stress test. So if interest rates do go up, how does that affect your overall financial plan? Can you afford to stay in that house? If the property values drop, can you afford to stay there? Is it going to cause problems on your mortgage? So there's just lots of things you need to consider. Identifying what works best for you is always best to sit down with a financial planner. Mortgage insurance, that's another thing that the banks often, or mortgage companies will often offer. It's almost a standard, just check the box and get mortgage insurance on a mortgage. Our thought is not exactly the same as the banks. Looking at getting individual coverage as opposed to getting mortgage insurance. Mortgage insurance is something that's set in place with the mortgage, and you think as a first-time homebuyer, you think you need it, or even experienced homebuyers. Don and I have seen lots of our older clients, you know, have had houses for the last 20 years, been paying mortgage insurance for 20 years and paying way too much for mortgage insurance when they could get individual coverage, cost less, it's level coverage. So yeah, go ahead, Don.
Yeah, and I think also on the mortgage insurance side of things, Jay, is I think just the name confuses people. They think it's like a different type of insurance, when at the end of the day, as you're just about to say, it's just simply a term insurance policy, and it pays out in case of a death. So to get a different, to buy term insurance rather than mortgage insurance, the end result is the same with better coverage and less cost.
No, absolutely. Yeah. So when you go in to get your mortgage, often, like I said, they'll just have you check the box. Say, yeah, of course you want mortgage insurance. You want to make sure you're protected. And it's a good thing that you're protected, but there's other options is what we were just talking about and saying. If you get individual coverage, yes, there's a little bit more legwork involved in terms of underwriting, but that's a good thing. When you go through an individual policy, you're going to get underwritten medically to make sure that you are healthy. Whereas mortgage insurance, it's not underwritten at time of application, it's underwritten at time of claim. So often we'll find when these mortgage insurance, people get the mortgage insurance, well, I'm uninsurable, I'll just get mortgage insurance. Well, the mortgage insurance actually wouldn't pay out if you were uninsurable at the time of application. So you can really, getting personal insurance, first of all, it's like getting a free medical. That's what Don and I always say. You know, you go through that medical process and you find out if the insurance company thinks you're healthy, you must be pretty good. But yeah, you definitely want to make sure that you cross your T's and dot your I's with all the aspects of a mortgage and real estate, because it's your largest purchase. And you want to make sure that you sit down with someone to go through everything. And it's not just sitting down with a bank. Sit down with your financial advisor and go through the whole comprehensive plan.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Going to take a quick break here. We're coming back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Don, you want to talk about New Year's resolutions, the financial kind. Now, do we have any hope of keeping these New Year's resolutions as we do, say, you know, losing weight, all that other stuff? What are our chances here, Don? Help us.
The same chance, basically, unless, and again, it would apply to whether it was a fitness goal or a weight loss goal or what have you. It's financial New Year's resolutions are just as easy to make and as easy to quit. Okay. They make you feel good, I guess, making them. In fact, 2/3 of Americans, they don't have a stat for the Canadians, but I'm sure it's similar. 2/3 of Americans are planning on making a financial resolution. But funny enough, 81% have already said, of those people, already say it's going to be harder this year with inflation. Okay. So they're already building in an excuse into the resolution so they don't feel bad.
They've got their escape clause already built in. Nice.
Exactly. All right. Well, if it wasn't for the inflation, Jay, we would have done, we would have had those this year. You know, that's what it is.
That's like saying, I'm going to lose weight, but I know we got Easter coming up around the corner there. So that's a big meal. I wait till after that.
Yeah. If it wasn't for Easter, we would have done great. But, and again, the top 2023 are, save more. And I'm sure that's been a consistent one all the way through. This was an interesting one, though. Don't sign up for more credit cards. Well, yeah, you shouldn't be doing that. And that's probably a good thing. But, you go to a store, especially just before Christmas, you saw, they have booths. They're trying to sign you up for the store one. You go to a sporting event. There's one there. You go on an airplane, they have you sign up for their one to get points. Like they have them everywhere and they try to encourage you to sign. Now, funny enough, the next number three in terms of top resolutions was improve credit score. Well, that goes literally with the second one. See, if you don't sign credit, the more you sign up for credit cards, the worse your credit score is. It actually knocks against your credit score. So, yeah, those two go hand in hand. I never would have thought number two would have been, don't sign up for more credit cards. But again, you're finding a lot of people in debt right now. And so, paying Peter, stealing from Peter to pay Paul kind of thing is like, okay, I'll take a loan off my credit card to pay off the other credit card. Not a great strategy, by the way. Create a personal budget. And this is very important. That was the next big goal that people have. Well, those are all good. Absolutely. But, if I were to say, what are the resolutions you need to make? First thing is, let's go back. Let's take a look at 2022 and say, okay, what mistakes did I make? Did I try to flip houses, as Jay said, in 2021, 2022? Probably not ideal. Again, that's speculating. Did I go heavy into crypto? Did I just basically gamble? And that's really what those are. And you learn from those mistakes. Think of investing and speculating. They're totally different beasts, and you got to understand the two. But so you write down your mistakes and so that you don't want to repeat those. On the same token, write down your victories. So what did you do well? Were you able to pay off your debts? Okay, how did I do that? Was I more disciplined? Did I save more? Maybe I got rid of a lot of the extra expenses I didn't need. So write down the ones you did because you want to repeat those ones. So you basically want to stop the ones that you made the mistakes and do more of the ones that you did you improved on. So in this one, create that budget. Now, for Jay and I, this is like a second normal thing we do every day. But it's funny when you ask people to create a budget sheet. I don't know about you, Jay, but how often do they do it right?
Yeah, definitely. That's one thing that we've been providing to clients is actual budget spreadsheets. I know it's painful, and we've talked about this before. Don and I are a little bit nerds when it comes to this type of stuff, but it's painful for most clients. But when we can provide an easy document and the banking software that's out there right now can link into an Excel spreadsheet very easily, where we can load all the data that you've spent your money on for the month or the year, and you can see exactly where you spent your money. And it's pretty easy once you got it set up. We can provide that to any one of our listeners. We can forward that off to them for sure.
Yeah, it's a great way, and it really breaks down your non-discretionary things you have to pay for, and those are the ones inflation has probably taken a chunk and made those a bit more expensive, groceries, hydro bills, etc. But the discretionary ones, whether it's a Disney Plus or taking traveling more or, whatever they may be, those are the discretionary. So it's like the must-haves and the like-to-haves and kind of separate the two. I spoke to a person actually over the holidays, and what he does every year, he goes through the list of all his expenses and he gets a bit of a joy on what can he chop out of it for next year. And often it's, okay, cable, maybe. And he actually calls the cable people and he gets a reduction almost every year. You know, whether it's a, we have an extra cell phone. Do we still need that? Is there a better plan? Do we need all the different apps, for example? And he goes through all those. So it's a bit of a game for him every year. And it's, you know, whether it's $100 a month, whatever, it's still $100 in your pocket. But at the end of the day, number three here is change your spending. You know, we're creatures of habit. And we just kind of just spend because we're just used to it. We stop at Tim Hortons or Starbucks and we get that coffee rather than making it ourselves. And it's become a habit. And that's why we need to make those changes to actually have extra money to do something with. And so by doing that, you can then list what are your financial goals and really get emotionally attached to them. I really want to do this, whatever it might be. I want to save $10,000 in my RSP this year. I want to pay off this by the end of the year, whatever it might be. But you really want to get involved in that goal. So therefore, it gives you more reason to change that spending habit. Okay. I know, Scott, you've mentioned many times about automatic investing.
Yeah.
It's the easiest way. It's one way. Talk about a New Year's resolution. This one's an automatic. You actually have to go out of your way to stop it.
You know, you mentioned something earlier, and you were both you and Jay were talking about budgeting and such and saving. And it's, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, and I'm sure many people are, well, you know, how can I save? I can barely make it by. But when you're getting something taken off your paycheck that you never see, that's a completely different scenario. And it really is the way to start out. It really is.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting. If they raised your hydro bill by $300 or $200 a month, for example, would you all of a sudden say, okay, we got to stop using hydro?
Yeah. Okay. Shut the lights out.
Yeah. But you, because it's a mandatory thing you have to purchase every month, you'll find a way to make it work. That's the same way. You got to pay yourself first on the savings side.
It's like the old wealthy barber thing. Pay yourself first, right?
100%. Yeah, 100%. So another
on
one
hydro, is, on a hydro note, my dad would make me shut off all the lights in my house.
Shut off hydro, that TV.
Yeah, we couldn't watch TV for a month if the hydro bill went up by $300.
It's so funny though. You can turn with all these LED lights. You can literally have everyone on. But if you use a toaster for like 30 seconds, it's as much as a week's worth of lighting. But nobody thinks to that anymore. Anyway, pay things off quick and buy things slowly. And so basically, when you're going to make a purchase, take us, you know, that second consideration or even think about it for a day. You may not even want it as much the following day. Okay. We're very impulsive when it comes to buying things. Pay off your credit cards in full. This seems like an obvious one. But any chance you have, if you have credit card balances, you basically use credit to augment your lifestyle. You've borrowed using 26% interest rates to augment your lifestyle. So if you're taking a trip and you're thinking, you know what, I'll just stick it on my credit card, and you have no reason you're going to be being able to pay this for the next few months, you're literally borrowing at that very high rates. So think about that. Financial literacy is extremely important, and being involved. Find a maybe get an app or find a book or anything just to become a little bit more involved in financial literacy. And finally, consolidate your debt. So those are the ones that are very easy, but it sounds easy. They all sound easy, actually. Losing 10 pounds sounds easy. All these things are not difficult, but it still takes a real specific plan. So there's a lot of goal setting strategies people use. And one of the ones that are very common is called the SMART principles. And basically, SMART is just an acronym, and it's S-M-A-R-T, obviously. And S stands for specific. And you have to have a goal that is specific, or a New Year's resolution specific. So what needs to be accomplished? I need to save money so I can buy a house. I need to put more money away from our retirement. Find out what that is. And then what steps need to be taken in order to get to that goal? So it's a very specific goal, and you write that one down. Second is M for measurable. Okay, I'm going to save $500 a month, for example, in my RSP next year. Hey, great time to start. It's January. Or I'm going to pay $500 more against my credit card every month, and I will make sure I do anything. I'm not going to go out. I'm not going to go to movies. I'm not going to do whatever it is until that is paid off. Okay. And again, you now have a bit of a game plan. A stands for achievable. Make sure it's realistic. You don't want to say, okay, yeah, you've never saved a penny in your life. I'm going to start saving $1,000 a month. And that first $1,000 comes off and, wow, that didn't feel very good. I can't do that next month. I got $1,000 more on my credit card because you did change your spending.
Yeah, that's definitely something we see. So people think they've got these ambitious goals of saving way more than they actually can attain, and they end up putting it on a line of credit or putting more money onto a credit card or a line of credit. And if it's on a line of credit, it doesn't make you any better off. And maybe no. You feel better because it's not on a credit card, but it's now it's on a line of credit at 7 or 8% in today's interest rate environment. It's not a good thing. So you definitely have to have that plan together so that you know how much you can save. Go through that budget, like you mentioned earlier, and see how much you can save. Set it realistic. It can't be unattainable.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a dream. And again, you haven't earned the right to have that. You're not there yet. It's certainly great to think that way. But mm-hmm. again, it's taking the baby steps to get there.
Yeah.
And R is for relevant. Make sure that this helps you out personally. You know, so it's going to make a big difference. And the way I like to look at how relevant this is start to visualize, okay, if I obtain this goal, how will that change my life? And think about that and say, okay, if I start putting this much more away per month, I will have a better retirement. And you can see that retirement. If I pay off all my credit cards, that allows me to put money away. It gives you freedom. And start visualizing, how am I going to feel about this? On the other flip side of this, if I don't achieve my goals, how's my life going to be then? And probably going to be similar to where you are right now, which probably isn't a great spot or where you want to be, put it that way. So again, put yourself, think of the, if you achieve it, and also what if I don't do it, and put yourself in, think forward and think, okay, this is where I'm going to be like. And that may motivate you that much more. And this, I find money management is just as much an emotional goal setting type of event as it is how much money do I make? Because we know of a lot of wealthy people that can't save and they have no money. And at the same token, we have, you know, upper middle class people that have been very good. The wealthy barber, as Scott had just mentioned, is a great kind of way of consistent savings. And finally, T stands for time-based. Put a time date on it. I'm going to achieve this by this certain date, and I'm going to measure it and do this, like look at it every month and see how much closer am I. You may have to make revisions along the way, but get emotionally attached. Don't just say, okay, here's my New Year's resolution. Cheers. And all of a sudden you do it for the first week and that's it. It doesn't work that well. And you're going to say, okay, I'm going to do the same thing next year. How fast did 2022 go by?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll be sitting here a year from now thinking, wow, that 2023 went by the same way. So you need to get these goals in place. So how are people doing this? Well, they need help. And it's funny enough, 41% of people are now using a financial app to help them, which is good. You know, there's a lot of great apps out there that kind of keep their spending in check or watch their goals, etc. 22% use an advisor. So almost a quarter, not too bad. 21% are doing automatic payments into it, and another 8 are using some other form. Funny enough, 27% are doing nothing, not using any help at all. I have a feeling they're not going to do that well. Weirdly enough, though, if you look at those, the ones using an advisor, and this has been proven, they've actually back-checked all this, they have a net worth that's 2 to 3 times greater than the ones trying to use their own devices. 2 to 3 times greater net worth. And as Jay was mentioning, the net worth all took a bit of a hit last year with markets and real estate and investments. Well, all I can tell you, if your net worth at retirement is 2 to 3 times greater, you will certainly appreciate that. And your life would be far greater. So there's so many different ways. Forbes actually came out. The first thing you should do with your New Year's resolution, number one, is meet with a financial advisor. I did not write this. Mm-hmm. Okay. I said, well, that's good for them. They made a whole lot of other things. At the end of the day, they also added raise your income. We can't control that, but, you know, get a side hustle. You know, as Jay had mentioned in an earlier show, is get a second job, do something you enjoy doing, make a few extra bucks and save that money. Review your beneficiaries. Very attainable. It's a great time to do it. And review your estate plan. So at the end of the day, we're in January. It's often one of the more depressing months, weirdly enough. There's usually a hangover from Christmas and bills. But if you start setting your goals and have clarity, follow that with a financial plan, and you can start to see results, you're going to be happier. And as Einstein says, and we've all heard this saying, the definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Going to take a quick break here. We're coming right back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. Find out more at donfox.net. Call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Jay, you're going to talk about annuities. What are they?
Yeah, so we've talked about it on the show. Gary, I believe, talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I talked about it a couple of months ago. It keeps coming up in our meetings more and more just because it's an investment that was more, I guess, more popular back in the 80s, kind of like you were, Scott, back in the 80s. You're a little more popular than you are now.
You're going to have to speak up. I didn't hear what you said there.
Anyways, interest rates are rising. They've risen 6 times in the last year. Sitting at 4.25. The Bank of Canada is at 4.25. Prime rate at 6.45. So interest-bearing investments, GICs, things that create interest-based are getting more and more to be topic of conversation, I guess, is what's coming up. So annuities are something like that. They're based on two things, or more than two things, but generally on two things, basically on the rate of return and on longevity or mortality rate. So with an annuity, what you end up doing is you put a lump sum into an investment and it pays out a certain amount on a month or annual basis. So an annuity, it provides tax-deferred growth. So you put the money in there and it sits there until you're ready to pull it out. So it's a nice vehicle where it's similar to an RSP or a tax-free savings account. Unlimited contributions. So with a tax-free savings account or RSPs or pensions, you're limited by the government on how much we can put into these. With an annuity, it's unlimited. If you've got non-registered annuities and you've got millions of dollars, you can dump millions of dollars into these plans. You have a choice of payout options. So often with a pension, you get your pension paid out on a monthly basis and it kicks in at 55 or 60 or 65. With the annuity, you determine when you want that payout to start. So there are some varying options with payouts. There's no mandatory withdrawal. So you don't have to start taking money out 65. You can delay it until 70 or 75 whenever you need the money. So it's really customizable that way. Often include a guarantee. So if you put the money in, it's guaranteed either to pay back the money that you've put in or guaranteed to pay out over a certain period of time. Also, there's often a death benefit associated with it. So there's some varying different things that will augment your risk or satisfy your risk. And then it's income for a lifetime. So with RSPs, you put money into an investment and it's market driven or market based generally. If it's in a mutual fund or a stock or something like that, and it's income for life. But if the investments go down, the income for life could run out if you're pulling too much money out. Where this is guaranteed, it pays out that income for life. And it's kind of a nice thing. It's a nice way to complement your existing RSP portfolio as almost like an individual pension. There are a few cons to this. There are fees associated with these types of investments. They can be very complex and should be part of an overall financial plan, not only about the highest payout. So often people say, well, what is the highest payout you can get me in on an annuity? It's not always about that. You often want to look at how is it structured? Is it indexed to inflation? Is there a return of premium on it? Is there a guaranteed return of premium? Is there a death benefit? So there's many different complex parts to it, which can be a little bit overwhelming. So you definitely want to sit down with a professional to discuss what your options are with that. It's also reduces your access to your funds. So once you lock into an annuity, once you put the money into the annuity, you can't break the contract. You're kind of stuck with it. So you don't want to put all your eggs in that basket. It could be a sliver of your retirement plan or your investment portfolio, but it limits your flexibility once you put all the money into it. So I look at it as an alternative investment to a GIC or something like that. Right now, the rates of return on the annuities are approximately around 5 to 5.5%. With GIC rates right now for a 1 year paying 4.25% 5.05, and a 5-year paying 4.35, these annuities are paying higher rates of return on that right now. The one downside to the annuity is that, yes, if you extrapolate it out and you live till 90, it pays out that 5.25. But if you start receiving an income and you pass away and there's no guarantee on it, and it pays out only over a shorter period of time, maybe that return rate is far less. So you really got to work what works for your financial plan. You know, GICs are definitely getting more and more popular now, and with these interest rates rising and the markets dropping, people are looking towards these fixed type of investments. So it's with these annuities, it's a guaranteed return. However, not necessarily guaranteed payout over your lifetime if your longevity isn't there. So that's definitely, when you're looking at an annuity, a couple key components to consider: your age. So when are you taking it out? If you're taking it out at an older age, what's your longevity or your projected longevity? What's your health like? So if you're in poor health or a smoker or something like that, your longevity isn't there. Annuities might not be the best option for you. Are you looking at a single or a survivor benefit? Do you have a spouse? Is this registered, non-registered? There's so many different variables that you can use with these annuities. Again, we're getting into the weeds a little bit here with the annuities, but definitely sit down with a financial investment advisor. See what's the best strategy for you in terms of what annuities work for you, because there's so many different options with these.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Going to take a quick break here. We're coming right back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. All right, some advice for U.S. taxpayers, Don?
Yes, and right off the get-go, you think, well, what's that have to apply to me for? Well, if you are a U.S. citizen, you are a U.S. taxpayer, okay? And there's a lot of Canadians that are, you know, they live here in Canada, they're paying Canadian tax, they're a resident of Canada, but they happen to be a U.S. citizen. They were born in the U.S., and they don't lose that. You actually have to revoke your U.S. citizenship in order to not be a U.S. citizen. If you have a U.S. green card and you're still a green card holder, you still have to file a U.S. tax return unless you file this non-resident form to allow you not to anymore. Or let's say you're a Canadian that works a lot in the U.S. and you have substantial presence in the U.S. and therefore do not meet the closer connection exemption. So, yeah, there's a lot of people that this covers, and boy, the rules are sticky, and the U.S. is going over after a lot of these people, particularly after about 2013. And so right away, a tax consequence of investing in Canada is you must file this report of foreign bank and financial accounts, otherwise known as a FBAR. I know it's a mouthful. But, I'm just going to touch on it a little bit today. We got 5 minutes. I just want everybody to be aware this is not easy. And you will need to meet with a U.S. Canadian tax advisor. Talk about complex. Oh, boy, I've spent so much time with some of my clients that are either moving to the U.S. or are U.S. citizens, and it is complicated. One good thing is RSPs and RIFs. There is a bit of a tax treaty with those. So at least when you are the income earned inside an RSP, you don't have to pay tax on. Income inside a RIF, you do not have to pay tax on. If you take money out of an RSP, there's a 25% withholding tax. And then use the tax treaty between the US and the Canadian, and it may actually work to your advantage. Now on RIFs, it's actually a little bit better. There's only 15% withholding tax. So if you're saying, I'm gonna take money out of my RSP and you're a US citizen, therefore, you may want to move it to a RIF first and then take the money out, and they'll hold back 15%. So then you look at the tax you'll pay in the state you happen to be in at that time and say, okay, what works best for me? Again, so many options to go through. I will not have time to go through it, but all I can tell you, it is complicated, and RSPs are probably the best thing. That's the least complicated. A lot of U.S. citizens, they're thinking, well, I live in Canada and get a tax-free savings account. Yes, you can, but they don't recognize it. So all the income you earn inside a tax-free savings account is taxable as a U.S. citizen. RESPs, they don't recognize. RDSPs, registered disabled savings plans, they don't recognize. So you got to be very careful with those. In fact, I would just recommend do not even have them. Do not have a TFSA. In fact, cash them in. Okay. It is just make your life way too complicated. Now, on the non-registered side, that's where it's even, I would say, it's the most complicated. So if you have just investments and you've now moved into the US and they are in a, you know, let's say you're taking a bit of a job change in Texas for 2 years. Well, they have this thing called the Passive Foreign Investment Company, otherwise known as a PFIC, rules to prevent U.S. taxpayers from deferring tax on passive investments. Now, what's a passive investment? Pretty much almost any mutual fund is a passive investment. An ETF, an exchange-traded fund, is a passive investment. And for each fund you have to fill a separate filing for that tax return. And in fact, if you have a fund of funds, so there's a lot of people, I'll just put it in this portfolio. There's 20 funds in there. You actually have to do 20 separate filings. So extreme, and not to mention, first of all, it's complicated. Second of all, it's costly. Each piece of paper costs at least $100. And the person I happened to speak with in the last couple of weeks, he was paying $500 per slip. So if you have 20 slips, that's $10,000. Extremely, crazy. And that's just administration.
Yeah.
And then they have this thing called mark to market, where you're actually paying tax on the growth you have on the investments every year. Well, I thought, okay, that's bad enough. It's capital gains. It's actually treated as normal income. You're not even getting it as a capital gain, which would have less tax. It's treated as normal investment income or interest income. So there's another way of doing it. It's called a qualifying electing fund, or QEF, which is a lot closer to the Canadian way. It's a better tax structure, and you'll pay less tax. Now, IG, thankfully, in the last year, has come out with these IG taxpayer portfolios. And basically, you get this extremely diversified portfolio of many different funds within a fund, but it only generates one slip. So the very worst case, you pay $500 for creating your tax return. You get, so the simplified reporting, you get globally recognized or world-renowned portfolio management through BlackRock, and they do a great job. Extensive diversification, not only geographically, they do asset classes, the market cap. There's a deeper toolkit for changing markets. They're constantly trying to change the allocation to make sure they're getting the best returns they can. And boy, they run over $10 trillion with a T. dollars in asset management. They're the largest in the world, and they're running this fund for us. So we're pretty excited about this. And they have dedicated oversight and rebalancing all the time. And this is made custom for your risk tolerance. So great option. If you are a US citizen, and you have non-registered money, you should give us a call. See if this fits what you should be looking at. If you're going to go to the States and you're going to be working down there for a year, 2-3 years, you may want to put your non-registered investments into a product like this. So anyway, definitely you should get your ducks in order before going to the States. Extremely important. You don't want to get on the wrong side of the long arm of Uncle Sam.
Yeah.
We have been planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Jay Llewellyn have been here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Another great show, gentlemen. Great way to kick off the new year.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.